Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Controversial subjects with the facts can be tense, but we are Aesop Science here to make things make sense.
Today we're talking about bodybuilding with my literal bodybuilding coach, aka my fitness coach. We're going to be learning about what bodybuilding is compared to powerlifting, compared to Olympic lifting. We're going to be talking about tons of fitness advice and going over some really cool research on the exact amount of strength training you should be doing in a week to optimize yourself.
Shit, bro, this was the bro episode sponsored by creatine.
This is a bro episode.
It is. We literally broed out with him. It's really embarrassing that it was recorded.
No, it's not.
That it was recorded me trying to bro out so
You
hard.
Are a bro. Greg is actually
I
a bro.
Am not,
Greg is a bro deep down. You are and you don't want to admit you're a bro.
God, are you kidding? I'm about to go paint a little gorgeous painting in my basement.
Yeah, there's lots of bros that do that. Ever heard of them? They're
actually
all famous.
Art bros are a different breed of their own. Art bros are so like...
But still bros, but art bros.
But what's the word? Menacing. Because they're like hidden as like, you know, like these alt people. But then when you really get to know them, they're just like obsessed with like drinking and being sexist.
Absolutely, my brain's melting that I was like trying so hard to think of like one famous artist and I couldn't. I was like, what are you, Da Vinci, the bro Da Vinci? And I was like, well, I guess he's kind of an artist, but that's not
Da
really.
Vinci.
Like, what is Picasso? There, finally. You're a modern day Picasso. I bet he was a bro. I bet Picasso was
kidding?
A bro.
And I'm Jackson Pollock. My female art teacher said about abstract expressionism, which is like picture Jackson Pollock. She's like, oh, it's just a bunch of boring people painting with their dicks. That's what she said.
Either way, we're bros this episode. Yeah. And actually, there's lots of great bros in this world, including Paul, who's going to be on this podcast.
Yeah, I was like, name one other than Paul.
Okay. No, we have bros that we know.
No, we do. And we have so many bro listeners, or no, not bro listeners.
We
have so many
straight
male listeners who have reached out about all of our gay information in really cool ways, being like, we find it really fascinating.
And they've truly opened their eyes.
Yeah, they've started douching. They've started letting their girlfriends eat their buttholes and stuff like that.
Speaking about that, no, this is not a segue. I was like, my birthday.
Oh, he douched.
I actually, when we recorded our interview with Paul, was actually earlier.
Before
the birthday. Yeah, I hadn't changed to the age I'm at, being left a secret. And now I have, and I absolutely feel like trash. I'm like, is this what it feels like to age?
I think you're hungover.
I know, but now that we had a little party, and it was like 3 or 4 days ago.
Yeah, no, it's been long enough because I was also at that party and like I feel like, to be honest, I don't feel like 100%, but I feel fine. Not compared to you being like,
I don't know
I
what
need
happened
a nap.
To me. I know. Literally the last 3 days I've been like needing so much sleep, being so tired.
But
my
now,
brain's not functioning. I've had 2 coffees and a tea today.
Yeah, that's all.
That's
lot.
Not natural for me.
Wow. He's going to like have shaky hands and throw something against the wall.
Even then I'm just like, I could fall asleep right now. And I had all that.
But speaking of fitness, aren't you going to go do some and that's going to maybe help?
Hopefully I'll go on a treadmill. I mean, the only reason I do it is so I can watch TV, to be honest.
Ooh, that's so smart. Habit stacking.
I've fallen really behind on BB can, so I got to go catch up on that on the treadmill.
Oh, wow. So it's like a way to watch TV while staying. That's smart.
Yeah, it's fun. And then actually, Drag Race is a really good one to run to because you like when they're dancing and doing the lip sync, you're like hearing a song, seeing the dance. And I always get so hyped up when I'm running. And I notice at those parts, it's so much easier for me to keep running and like put the treadmill up higher.
Oh my God, but we watched Drag Race together. What?
Oh, but there's been times like you stopped watching International.
Oh, yeah, you know what I mean?
And there's been other seasons where you just stop and then I get to just...
Post-Jimbo, like, I was a little bit sad and I turned that one off.
Yeah, and then I also... Actually, Survivor is a good treadmill show too because of challenges. And then I go like...
But I watched Survivor with you too.
No, not Australian Survivor.
Oh my God.
Yeah, girl, there's a lot of versions of all the shows I love.
Wow.
But any challenge in the music, I'm just like, you're in the challenge. Like, prove to yourself you can do it.
So what are you watching today on the treadmill?
Big Brother. Canada, okay. Because I fell behind. But yes, I am a year older, feeling it a lot, but had a great weekend. It was nice, like, to finally be able to have like friends over at our house. We haven't done that in like years.
Yeah, no, it was great.
So, anything else you want to say about me aging? Any other surprises?
I didn't know we're not allowed to say the number, so I'm just trying really hard not
okay,
to say the
I'm 34. I'm 34. Could you bleep that?
Yeah, bleep it.
We also need to absolutely drag you on the podcast for the other day saying,
oh, yeah.
Edit that out, me. And oh, truly, yeah. It's our assistant, Millie, who edits the podcast now.
I don't edit the podcast anymore, but I still in my head sometimes panic at the idea. Especially sometimes when we're doing this on a Friday afternoon and I'm feeling a little frisky, if you know what I mean.
Frisky?
I've eaten weed.
Oh, yeah. Which is most of the time. But not right now, actually.
No.
Because it is a Tuesday and I'm 34.
Yeah.
Please bleep those numbers every time. Okay, shall we like get into our little... What'd you learn this week?
Yeah.
More like what I learned this year.
Oh, what did we learn this week?
Which is nothing, by the way.
What? Kidding.
What did I learn in the year of 34 or 33?
Yeah, any big takeaways?
Speaking of fitness, like, I think the thing I learned this year is that you can still become more fit. I know I'm not, like, what? Obviously that old. No, but there's this, like, fear that your body starts to degenerate, which in some ways it does. But in the last year, I've, like, put a lot more focus on trying to, like, work out on a regular basis and, like, even do cardio on a regular basis. And a lot of, I know I've talked about it on this pod, but a lot of those things that I had problems with back, knee, have slowly become better. So it's like not just a degenerative process. It's like you can kind of work on your body in a way that helps to overcome those things, even at old age. And so many studies support this. Even at age 90, exercise is good for you. You know what I mean?
Habits stack your TV.
But my actual what you learn this week is for all my people out there with anxiety and depression. Woo!
Let's put it up in the house, on the club.
Greg, I think I already told you this. Because I was so excited, I thought it was so interesting, but you're just gonna have to pretend it's new information for you. So, a new study came out with some new perspectives on a simple way to increase your well-being. You know, because we're always told that exercise is key, you gotta be moving, and that is true. A lot of studies find, obviously, exercise is great for mental health in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. But this new study found that the more varied locations a person visits in a day, the better they feel about their emotional and psychological well-being. Isn't that cool?
Me, you never heard it after being told that. No, I think it's so smart and cool and true. And ever since you told it, I've literally gone outside more.
Now, for the sake of the study, like obviously I'm extrapolating to myself, but this study was on a variety of in and outpatients. So people that were officially diagnosed with like depression or anxiety and were either being held in like a facility or out on their own, but still like working with you know, like a foundation. Obviously, I'm not doing that, but I'm just like taking the results for myself because I feel anecdotally that it helps me too. So they had actually tracked them with GPS and they were like tracking also their well-being and how they felt. And even when their mental health symptoms were still there, they felt that it was helping them.
I honestly think it's so like true. Even today, it was sunny out. I was biking around the city. I was just doing things and I just felt like,
better.
Oh, I went on a walk with Nathaniel, my friend.
Yeah.
And I just was like, that's what life's about.
Just like it being like, somewhere else. I think the pandemic
stole. Even though it was like 15-minute walk, it was just like weirdly something I wouldn't usually do. Usually I'd be doing work
just in the same spot all day.
And it just was like a little thing that made me be like, that was great.
Yeah. I think I realized too, that's like was really, as much as I am an introvert and liked being home in the pandemic, I also, and I'm excited for this to come back, like love to just go sit in a cafe and do work there for an hour even.
Yeah.
And just like read or take notes or even just do emails. Like it makes you feel like you've done something. Your day is actually segmented. And so I thought that was really cool. Like the greater in this study, the person's movement, the more likely it was to coincide with greater sense of well-being.
Isn't it so weird that like we could do that now, but for some reason I haven't really thought that we could.
Because it's still, I mean, it's also still winter. Like, we're just coming out. It's cold. Left, like, go trek your way over somewhere. But, yeah.
But I think, it's more COVID. COVID's so annoying. Because yeah. It's, like, even just going to the cafe at work isn't that. Just, like, free from being that, exposed.
That little voice in the back of your head.
Yeah. It's annoying.
Anyway, exercise. Obviously, this has no implication on, like, that not being true. True exercise is also great for you. But this is just a nice way to be like, hey, maybe that's a simpler explanation for somebody who has a hard time breaking through that exercise.
I'm totally barrier. Doing Just Dance tonight.
But, oh yeah, but that's not changing locations.
that's true. I'm going to do Just Dance in the park. Oh, wow. Should switch. That be a thing?
The Switch. That's what this for.
Okay, guys, squint really, really hard because it's a tiny screen, but we're going to do Just Dance. It's leaned up on that tree.
You would do that too.
No, I'll just use Just Dance because it'll, like, I have such muscle memory for every song to remind me. So then people just will follow me.
Oh, like they're using your body choreography. Like,
reach out if you think that should be an Uber experience or whatever. I would do that in the park.
Oh, we only just learned about Uber experiences. I didn't know that was a thing. That it's like, I thought they were just officially coordinated by Uber, but it's like anyone can make an Uber experience.
I know. I don't know if they would like kick me off the app, but I really want it to be I give everyone shrooms and we go bird.
Oh, you'd get kicked off the app.
Because of the shrooms?
You can't. Yeah.
And then that'd be bad if they weren't on shrooms and only I was. And they'd truly be like, your muscles are relaxing and you're now just sitting down. Why aren't you taking us birding? And I'd be like, is anyone else feeling this?
Okay. Oh, one more fun little tidbit talking about my birthday in Survivor. Greg got me a cake and it was Jeff Probst nude. Actually, yeah. It was cut off at the penis because they wouldn't print off like
yeah, so a naked if image. You're of age, Google Jeff Probst naked. It's literally Google images. It'll come right up. pretty good. Pretty good impressive. Dick pic. Impressive yeah. Dick pic.
And honestly. That was what was on my cake.
And beautiful. Yeah, but they had to cut off at the pubes legally because I guess if they had like a young worker.
Yeah, you can't just like be printing off porn in like a store. Anyway, what did you learn this week? That's what you learned. You can't just be printing off porn in a store.
Okay, so I learned about elephants in Mozambique. It's kind of sad, but it's also interesting.
Okay,
but due to poaching, which was like a really intense thing that happened in the 80s and 90s in Mozambique.
For their tusks?
Yeah, for their tusks, for ivory and their tusks to get money that was funding a civil war at the time. Oh. They poached them to such a small amount that as they're now, good news, sort of recovering, they're becoming more tuskless. Because they were like bottlenecked down to such a small amount.
Oh, like the genetic pool is less likely to be.
It's one so that well. Tusks. They're realizing like this is really weird because obviously it's not like Lamarckian or whatever. It's not like you just like don't want if the
no yeah they obviously tusks, the elephants don't know that.
But it's saying that like something has happened where obviously the reason that tusks are advantageous is that they can like dig and lift and gather food. And strip bark. And, like,
and presumably like fight.
And defend. Right? Yeah. But obviously that's actually no longer the case because there are a lot of elephants that don't have tusks in this part of Africa that were then not poached. So it was now becoming a like advantage, like an to evolutionary advantage to not have tusks.
Like because, microevolution. Yeah. Or like a forest. What did you say? Like when humans are intervening in evolution.
Yeah. And I didn't like both male and females have tusks in this part of Africa, but in other parts of the world, it's like.
Oh, yeah. I thought it was only males.
Yeah. That's like in Asia, apparently. Oh,
yeah. It's so cool to realize that there are like distinct differences between Asian and African elephants.
Yeah. And cool. I know because we're so ignorant in Canada. We're like, an elephant. But they're probably like, no, there's all different kinds. And we're like, yeah, there's different kinds of bears, too. Do you know that?
Yeah. So that species in particular now in that region in is like having less tusks as a result of that natural selection pressure almost.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe not natural, but...
Well, they're trying to like figure it out. But I'm like, that's so interesting.
Very cool.
And they're coming back. They're coming back there. They're coming back there.
I love a comeback story. Ooh, love the comeback. Lisa Kudrow.
Yeah, everyone should go watch that.
Okay, well, let's take a little break and then we'll come back with my trainer. And we'll be getting ripped together.
You're getting ripped tonight. R.I.P. that.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Study time.
Study time.
Study time. Study time.
Okay. We are here with the man himself who's making me absolutely jacked as we speak. My trainer, personal coach, former power lifter. Have I got that right?
Yep.
Paul Hines. I'm always like, is it Hines?
It's Hines.
I never have to say your last name, so I'm always just like, I assume that's it. Yeah, we're going to talk about bodybuilding today.
Which isn't powerlifting.
Exactly.
Correct.
But I, formerly on an episode, had no idea there was a difference between them. I did not know bodybuilding was about aesthetic. I thought it was about muscles, which I guess it
is. No, it's about muscles, but it's like, oh, like who's the strongest?
Yeah, and so you're going to teach us about that right now because that's where I want to start because we didn't know the difference between them.
We fought.
Greg knew more than I did.
Well, no, I'm just like bodybuilding to me is like these competitions that are absurd. And I just have been curious about how you win one if it's not about who's the strongest.
Yeah. So what is bodybuilding as a place to start off?
It's an aesthetic competition first and foremost.
Okay.
So it's about how you look at the very core of it, but also how much muscle you're carrying, how symmetrical you are, like how symmetrical is your development overall. In other words, the gym bro who has very tiny legs and a big upper body would not win a bodybuilding competition because the judges are looking for, you know, your proportions to be relatively even. You don't want too much development in one area that outshines another.
So there's no strength component of bodybuilding?
No, you use strength to
like
build
to
your
get
muscles,
your body. Okay,
but on
you
stage, they're
strong.
Not asking you how much you deadlift or how much you squat or anything. And then they're also looking at conditioning. So how lean are you? In other words, how much definition is visible? And that's how the criteria is used to judge.
Okay.
And some subjectivity is
yeah,
involved,
like how
but
did...
like, and there's some controversy sometimes because like the person who's more conditioned doesn't win. And,
right.
You know, people on the internet get really upset. But
so does it come down to like just a handful of judges? Is that what bodybuilding usually is? Like there's a panel of X amount of judges that are looking at it, or is it like, does it depend on the competition? Or
there's multiple federations, but yeah, usually there's a number of judges. Like I think any competition, even in the Olympics, there's multiple judges that are judging the competitors, and then they all give their own individual rating.
Mm-hmm.
And then that person, it's usually 2 or 3 days, and then they got called back up to come on stage, and they compare that person to the other people who got called back.
Okay.
So if you get like another call out, as it's called, then that you're in good shape. If you don't get a call out, that means you're not coming back.
Okay.
Then like you auditioned and you didn't make the part, right?
Okay. But do they ever with like measuring tape go around a bicep?
No.
So it's purely what it looks like.
Yeah. Yeah.
And has that changed over time? Like, I feel like we kind of chatted about this and you like, who decides? Is there a rubric? Like when you're bodybuilding, are people like, okay, I know I want my abs to look this way, so I need to exercise this way.
Yeah, like it's like, and is it like,
or how
are
big
pecs
do you want your
worth more than like your arms?
It depends on the federation, and it also depends on the type of competition. Like now they have bodybuilding and then they'll have physique competitions where it's or men's physique where, or like women's physique where, like for the men, they just wear board shorts, so they actually cover up their most
because
of
they're like,
why?
That's not
because it's not designed to be mostly about mass and like how big someone is. So if you look at the old school bodybuilders like Arnold and like the era of
Arnold,
the era of pumping iron, right? Yeah, I can do more of that accent if you want.
Yeah, he works out. Milk is good, Arnold.
Milk is for babies. If you're a real man, you drink beer.
Literally a quote from Pumping Iron. But and you look back at the bodybuilders in that era: Frank Zane, Serge Neubrett, Franco Colombo.
Yeah,
there are heroes.
Google them. Google them if you're curious. Franco Colombo used to be the Incredible Hulk.
Yeah, no,
he did. That's the actor.
Yeah.
Because they couldn't green screen muscles back then. They had to have a guy that
actual
big.
Actual muscles.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, like you had no editing, right? So
right.
Like you had to get someone that jacked to be the Hulk.
And they painted him green?
Yeah, exactly.
That is so interesting.
Oh, my God. Alphabet energy.
Yeah.
But back then, there was a different aesthetic, right? Their waists were much leaner. They could do the vacuum where you basically like pull your stomach in. And your rib cage is like showing. There wasn't as much focus on mass overall, like at all costs.
It wasn't
and
about
then,
being as big as possible. It was more.
It was being able to suck in that weird look.
Yeah,
with the oil.
It's an abdominal control. It's amazing,
which is cool.
But yeah, also freaky.
It's freaky.
You're not holding it for long periods of time, so it's. Yeah. I mean, like I any like... sport, this is not about health. Let's just be honest.
Oh, he's calling it a sport.
I would. You're training for something, what and you're being judged on it. Yeah, right? So
sport where you tan and put oil on you.
Okay. Oh my god, great.
Wait. I have another question. Is tanning part of it?
Yeah. Well, like they have to fake tan, and usually that's so to make the muscle definition show more, right? Because they're already pretty lean, right? They're already, you know, in single digit body fat by the time they step on stage, or at least they should be if they want to place well. And then
they want to get a callback, they better be single digit body fat.
Well, you want your skin to be very thin, right? So then to have the muscle definition show even more, they'll have multiple layers of usually fake tan on, and they'll have someone usually helping them to contour it. So
I was gonna say, is that if it's fake tan, is that not like doping? If all of a sudden you're drawing on the abs?
Well, they're not drawing on the abs. The abs still exist.
Okay, sorry, right, but I have a question.
Like, are they emphasizing? Like,
can
it by
they
going
emphasize with like paint? Or
so
no?
Like,
is that like a no-no?
You've painted. I know. I've seen your paintings, right? Maybe you added some shading, let's say, but the overall mass is still there.
Okay,
right?
But it's not like
you're
not
accentuating
like,
it.
You're
say.
Like allowed. It's not like if they find out you like added some like brown paint vibe to an ad that you got like kicked out.
No, you would. That I don't think I've heard of that happening. But again,
because it's so weird, because they are so tanned, and like, is tanning actually help with muscle definition visually?
If you, depending on how you layer it, sure. But wow. I mean, again, like, you can't fake how wide you are, or how pronounced your chest is, you know, from a side view, or like even how big your arm is, like that. You're not gonna be able to paint
make up
way
And actually, it's interesting though. Actually, tanning I feel like would give you more muscle definition, because if you have like divots in your body or your chest is big, you're going to tan in different ways on those spots that it probably does bring out like that.
Think about like
that natural shading.
Next week, I'm just like Ariana Grande, fake tan. Hey,
you've gone through multiple stages from like red to brown to now. Okay. Now I'm in my peak form.
So like, it's just a physical visual competition where these judges judge. And then there's no measurement. Are there different classes of people, like the smaller ones to the medium to the biggest, and then you win your like thing, like
your
wrestling?
Division? Yeah. So I don't know what the current weight classes are now, because I think they've changed recently. But you'd have, you know, from the 100s all the way up to the super heavy, which if I last recall was above 270 pounds.
Wow.
Right? And you can win your class, and then you can also win the overall. So if the judges, you get the highest scoring, basically based on the criteria that you're rating, you can win the overall, you know? So that's a big deal if you do that, because that means you beat not only everyone in your class, but
like
all the bodybuilders that were at that show.
And beat them because truly, like, some people were like, you look the hottest.
You look the most jacked, and we can see striations in your glutes. Yeah.
It's like, sounds pretty gay to me.
It's so gay. If it's guy on guy judge, it's so gay. But okay, also, is there a world where they're all getting ready in like the change room, and they know that that's the guy that's going to win because he's the biggest? Or like, can someone go up there and like a peacock like puff themselves so well that
I mean,
they,
you
like,
do
win?
You do pump up backstage, because
like,
by the time
out?
You you do. You usually bring bands behind stage with you, and you do a bunch of arm and chest and back exercises, whatever, just drive more blood into the areas that are going to be more pronounced. Yep. And also before that, you've been dieting down to very low levels of carbohydrates usually, so that you are as lean as possible. And then you get, after you weigh in, you get to refeed, much like an MMA fighter would after they weigh in, where they get to take in some nutrients and start to rehydrate and rebuild that fullness in their muscles that will make them more visible
like
and
energy.
Popping on stage.
And your weight category is before that. You get as light as you possibly can.
You have to be inside your weight
class. All your liquids, like go to the bathroom.
Peeing, taking big old dumperoonies that day.
Yeah. And then you pump up backstage. And yeah, sure, when you're backstage, you're looking around and you're seeing, oh, that I know that person because they're an up and comer, or I know that person because they won last time. Depending on who's there in your region, right? If you're at the Arnold, which is like one of the bigger competitions in North America,
Arnold,
then you're getting the best of the best.
Right.
Wow.
Those
North
people
America.
Are
I
like,
need to watch that.
So what I'm curious about is, okay, is there, once you're there, is it easy to like choke on stage. Like, you know, if you're like a figure skater, it's like you could be the best in the world, but if you fall, you're not going to win this round.
Like, you don't puff your tits big enough. Yeah.
Or is it pretty much like, okay, it's if you're there at that stage, you already have what you have and you're just showing it off.
So the only, that's a good question. The only thing I could think of that would come into play is with the posing. Because there is a competitive aspect where you are side by side with however many people are in your class and you get judged kind of comparatively.
Right.
And then there's also the solo act where you basically pose on stage and you incorporate a series of poses, like most muscular, where you're like flexing like this, or like a double bicep where you're flexing like this. And then the judges are just focused on you.
Right.
So that factors somewhat into the overall score.
Building up points but through that.
You still got to be better than the other
people. Yeah.
And they're never judging hot face.
No. Not that
allowed.
I know of.
But listen, subjectively, I they are.
Do you think they would admit that if they were?
Yeah, exactly. They're not admitting it, but if one of them's got a gorgeous
face. There should be a study on that to be like, is there a natural influence of how beautiful someone's face is? That,
or how
like,
symmetrical.
Yeah.
Their face is more symmetrical.
Without the judges even necessarily realizing impacting their
throats. No, and that's true. And also like, the like type of skin, because if you were black or you were white, people are like white tanning to try and get ahead. But if you're black, you're like, well, I can't like tan in the same way.
Yeah, they still put tan on though.
Oh really?
Oh yeah.
Wow.
Oh,
yeah. Okay, well there you go. And I'm just like, there could be a lot of interesting sociological experiments about some racism going on in the bodybuilding community. That's true.
Probably. Yeah, probably.
But like, oh man, I need to see the Arnold. Where do you go? I'm assuming
you
it's
have
in,
to
like,
go to
Texas.
Ohio, but you can.
Oh, Ohio, of course.
You have to literally go. You can go on YouTube and just watch the highlights from people.
No, I want to be in person. I want to smell the fake tan.
Yeah.
And I want to smell the farts. Because you know that change room's going to smell like...
Well, you know, I already told you Greg is curious about this.
Yeah, I have a problem because I'm trying to gain muscle and I smell so bad. What do I do? What do I do?
Well, I mean...
Don't pretend you don't know what I'm talking about.
No, I do know. I'm assuming you're talking about the byproduct or the side effect of a lot of whey protein or protein powder.
Yeah, it's not even whey.
Is that the main
culprit? It's just protein.
Well, let's use process of elimination. Was it happening before you started taking...
I mean, he has always been fairly smelly.
Okay, whoa. Drag me to the core of the earth.
It's definitely worse.
No, I'm trying to like eat more protein.
Last night I came home and was like, something's
wrong.
It was bad.
Like, it was like sick. It was like truly... Yeah, last night it smelled like a really bad like restroom like at a gas station. Like in our whole home. And I was hoping you were coming home half an hour later. So I was going to open a door.
I was like, is something rotting or did you just fart a lot?
Okay, so like, we know that it's like sulfur byproducts. So like there are lots of things that like I'm eating on top of just protein. Like I eat lots of like broccoli and eggs. And like those create fart smells. But I am also like trying to like lift weights and eat a lot of protein.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, is that...
I think he's eating too much. Do you want me... Tell them,
yeah, like, sometimes eat like 170 to 200 grams of protein.
So, I mean, here's the thing, right?
Everyone's like, jaws are on the floor.
No, I'm not. I mean, I'm about 225 and I aim for 200 plus grams a day. So,
wow, you must smell like shit.
No, but so here's the thing, right? It's like, I think that the, like any kind of food sensitivity issue you're having, like doing a process of elimination to find out what are your triggers is probably a
true. Like it might not just be protein. It might be
something
of the protein sources.
So to start taking things out. Although we did do an episode about my fart problem and realize like bananas do help, like certain types of carbohydrates. And I have not been eating bananas, and so I started putting them in my smoothie today. Because I realized I'm like, maybe
they're
I need to go back to that.
Binding agent, right?
And they also just have like certain like biochemical.
I love bananas.
Yeah, fantastic. So I think that maybe like I will say I have not been eating bananas.
Yeah.
So I'm going to try that before I process of eliminating.
So I'll tell a personal story. So I've found that depending on the brand, if we're going to talk specifically about protein powders, like I would use whey, certain brands are worse than others, right?
For the fart?
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. For the digestive system, right? I used to work in construction, and I remember I was taking a weight gainer actually at the time, and
what's
that's
that?
A little bit different than protein in that it's much higher carbohydrate to protein
like
ratio,
protein.
Whereas usually protein powders like, are much more protein versus the ratio of carbohydrates is pretty minimal. And I remember my boss at the time was in the front of the house framing the house, and I was in the back, and he was like, "Well, I guess the Canadian government is doing some chemical testing." Like it was that bad,
God.
And this is like a two-story house, you know, in like the suburbs of Brampton.
Oh,
so, and I'm like, that was my cue. I need to stop taking this. Because you know what? If it means that I have to eat a bit more food to get the same caloric intake, I'd much rather do that and not kill anyone than.
So that's called weight gainer?
Weight gainer, yeah.
So you can, do you buy it under the name weight gainer or is usually, it a type of protein powder?
No, it's called weight gainer and it's usually very high calorie per scoop. Whoa. So again, like with any supplement,
put on mass.
It's designed to help you supplement your diet, right? So my usual recommendation for like protein powders or powders in general is like, maybe just don't have more than half your intake come from it.
Oh my God, no, that's not that's not what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I hope not.
No, like, I know.
You
I'm
can
just
even
like,
adjust that ratio, right?
Okay. So some people like maybe cross that threshold of like half of their diet is like more like protein powder.
But you eat 225 grams of protein a day?
No, I'll try to stay around there. Again, it's not an exact number because there is a like it's not like if you eat more protein, you're gonna automatically build more muscle. Like muscle is a very expensive, time consuming process, requires a lot of resources. So as long as you're within, you know, 0.8 grams a kilogram of body weight, which is kind of the base level and universally agreed upon in the dietitian or nutrition world.
0.8 per kilogram.
Yeah. All the way up to I would go 1 gram or 1 gram per pound of body weight, but that's if you're someone who's like training. Like
really pushing.
You're really trying to gain muscle, then that's the target that I'd say you aim for, and then you just make adjustments based on how you feel and how sensitive you are to like what you're taking in.
When you're trying to build muscle and you're say you're eating one
this is a personal question.
1 pound
for a friend.
1 pound of protein per pound. Wait, no, 1 gram of protein per pound.
Yeah.
How much should you be like weightlifting in minutes per day before you're just like not? Do you know what I mean? Like I'm doing like a 45 minute workout, like 5 days a week.
So, I'll flip this question back. On
okay.
You, right. Is it the time spent in the gym or is the work that you're doing that matters within that time? That
Okay. That's a good point. Okay. It's good work. It's good work. I'm doing good work, but so it's like, only like 45 minutes.
Cause what I mean is like people can get caught up in like, it's like the Malcolm Gladwell 10,000 hour,
right,
you know, number. If I get 10,000 hours of this, that means I'm going to be an expert.
Mm.
And it's like, maybe, I don't know. Mm-hmm. So just because you do 5 days a week of working out, I don't know what type of workout you're doing, body parts you're hitting, how close you're taking your sets to failure, how much you're recovering between sets, how much sleep you get at home, what you're eating. Like there's a lot of other factors.
See, now I know all this because he trains me.
Damn. I'm like, I need to know what those things are.
No, your job.
Do you go to failure?
Well, now I try to. It's my least favorite thing.
Yeah.
I feel more
but
confident.
But he's there to help you.
Yeah. I'm there to push him. Right?
Yeah.
And you know, there for someone like Mitch who historically
give us the good.
No, so historically, like you came from a place where you were using fitness initially to help like with your back pain and with like your sensitivity overall.
Yeah.
And now, and I said this to you when you first started working with me, there's gonna come a time when like we're gonna go closer to failure on stuff and it's not going to be comfortable.
Right.
But that mechanical tension or getting closer to like when you cannot do another repetition is a part of like building muscle.
Yeah.
You don't want to do it all the time, but it is good to expose yourself to that every once in a while.
So you've done that?
Yeah. I mean, obviously you've done that.
No, I know, but I'm talking about you. I'm talking about
well,
you.
Well, now, yeah. Spotlight I feel like now you. I finally hit that point where I am like, I actually want to push myself more.
Yeah.
Because for so long, like obviously I had all these back problems in the past.
And they go away from
exercise. Oh my God.
Exercise.
It's been the, and I like knock on freaking wood, but this is the longest I've ever gone without a back incident.
I know. It's amazing.
And even like that when it's sometimes it might be like a little off, but it's so different now. Like it's just like a little off. And that's like the most I've had for like a year and a half, which is nice. But now I feel like finally I'm like, okay, that's gone long enough. Now I've been
let's go to failure, bro.
Yeah, I'm ready. I mean, at a certain point you're like, well, if I'm here, I might as well be like pushing myself.
Yeah. Yep.
I wanted to go back to not to bodybuilding, but clarify the difference of powerlifting.
Yeah.
And have
that's
you,
what you did.
Ever bodybuilded? Like
have I ever stepped on stage in a Speedo and oiled myself up? No.
Okay.
No. Damn it.
I know. You can't find those videos because they don't exist.
I love. I just remembered the Speedo of it all.
Lifting, I'm assuming then, is about how much you can lift.
So in the world of strength sports, which if we'll call bodybuilding a sport, even if Greg doesn't want to, we'll throw it in there. Bodybuilding would be the one that's all about aesthetics and has a slight subjective bias based on who's judging. Whereas powerlifting would be literally about who can lift the most weight on three lifts. So like your back squat, your bench press, and your deadlift. And you either lift it or you don't. And there's criteria you still have to follow. In other words, for the squat, for example, you have to hit a certain depth.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
And there's three judges there watching to make sure that you do. Usually two on the sides.
They're like tennis judges when the ball goes out and they're just like,
yeah. 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 And there's no instant replay. There's no VAR, right, but so like,
oh my God, would the instant replay be their ass? It just would. Like it would be like, oh, like slow mo.
Probably be a side view. Sledding. It's kind of hard to judge depth from behind. Just to be clear. Okay, okay. Yeah.
But still, I would love the Olympics having to be like, look at that ass getting low.
Yeah.
Oh, didn't hit the line.
And then for bench press, you are basically, you have to pause in your chest with the barbell sometimes until you hear your press command.
Okay.
And then lock out fully. Oh, fuck. And you know, your butt has to stay on the bench. So if your butt rises off the bench, it's the judges like will see that. That's a no lift.
Oh,
if you rack
DQ'd.
If you rack the bar before they say rack, then you also may miss the lift.
Wow. That's so stressful.
That is
and
like
then for the deadlift, the deadlift is the last lift of the day, and it's the simplest. You literally walk up to the bar, they're not gonna cue you to when to pick it up. You just grab on, get tight, and then stand up. And then you have to lock out fully. And then they'll say down, and you can get called for if you hitch or like trying to hop the bar up your legs, or if the bar goes back down and then comes back up. Like, there's a lot of details that vary from federation to federation, but
is
by
that
and large,
the Olympic one?
No, so that's
something else.
Yeah, yeah.
Wait, so what was that one?
That was powerlifting. So squat, back squat on your back with a bar, sitting down and then standing back up, bench press, laying down on a bench, pressing the bar up after pausing in your chest, and then deadlift this bars on the floor. Hip hinge, go down, stand up with it.
Done all those. How about you?
Yeah.
I don't know.
They're good exercises. And then Olympic lifting.
Oh my God.
Is the celebrity cousin of powerlifting. In other words, you can do it on an international stage at the Olympics.
Right.
So there's no powerlifting in the Olympics. It's just the one that they lift. Okay, explain that.
So Olympic lifting is a two lift sport. Right, where you have the snatch, which is basically a wide grip on the barbell, starting in a squat on the floor. You basically stand up, you extend explosively, and you throw the bar overhead and usually catch it in a deep squat.
Yeah.
You have to stand up with it until the judges say down, and then you put it down. And there's no eccentric or lowering component of lifts. Like, that's why you see them drop the bar versus with powerlifting, you don't do that.
Okay. You have to control it usually.
Oh, wow. And then the clean and jerk, which is hands kind of in a deadlift grip on the bar, like right outside of your knees. You start in a deadlift position, stand up, catch it in what we call the front rack, like on your shoulders like that. And then you jerk the bar up into a locked out position. Judges say good as soon as you're standing still, and you come back down.
Do you have to be able to do both, or are they separate competitions?
No, you have to be able to do both.
It's like you get, it's like one round is this, then one round is this. And
you just snatches first, gets the lighter of the two lifts, and then the clean and jerk.
That one's scary. And why is that the only one in the Olympics? Do you know, or is it just some weird like historical thing?
I honestly think that I don't know if there's any historical evidence as to why it's not, but I think powerlifting as a sport, they've both gone through multiple iterations historically. Like, they used to have other lifts that were involved in Olympic lifting and powerlifting, and then they kind of phased them out, or someone said, it's like versions of the Bible. Someone's like, let's take this part out, and then like
they just decided,
and then we're going to do it this way, and then you guys are all wrong because you do it this way,
right?
Like religion, for lack of a better comparison,
like religion. It does just like change, and everyone just like says it's one thing.
And then you have these members over here which follow this discipline, and then these
and they
ones
hate
over here.
The other people.
So powerlifting is actually really, really bad for that. Like, not at the grassroots level. Like, you'll see local meets in Toronto and their surrounding area, which are very, very welcoming and very open, but like at the higher level, like everyone has their opinion about which is the best way to do the sport. Olympic lifting, you see less of that, right? So you'll see coaches who disagree with the approach by which you put someone on the podium in Olympic lifting, but I mean, if they're still producing a world champion, it doesn't really matter.
And that one's like a little less subjective, certainly less subjective than the showing off my muscles with oil one.
Yeah,
but they're lifting things above their head, and if they can't, they can't.
And there's some subjectivity, like if you don't follow the guidelines for the lift, then you can also get disqualified, but it's not about at all how you look.
Right.
Just complete opposite from bodybuilding.
I can't believe bodybuilding
is just describe what is the visual difference between, like, when someone's a great power lifter or Olympic lifter, like, what do they look like? Because I don't really watch either of the sports. I can picture a bodybuilder, like, doing the poses and obviously being really ripped. But I'm now
and
assuming
sucking in their stomach. That's
I'm
so
assuming
visceral.
A power lifter will have, like, a much higher fat percentage. Like, not be
they're not
going to
be
being
trim.
Shredded, but maybe just being bigger. Is that true?
So, again, this kind of depends on what level you're looking at. If you're looking at you know, beginner to intermediate who are just competing at local meets, you'll see a very wide range of body okay. types there. Same for Olympic lifting, actually. So when I've competed or when I've taken my team to compete, it's their first time doing it and it's their first time competing in anything, they're actually very surprised at like how much body diversity there is.
Because okay, interesting.
As long as you can do the lifts,
yeah,
you can
right. do it. That's like, cool.
It's really cool. It's really actually quite inclusive versus bodybuilding, which takes like right. a much higher level of discipline, a much like longer really time frame to get that to kind do, of development yeah. where you can actually show it off. And you know, there's just lower risk. You know, when it comes to powerlifting, or even Olympic lifting, not from an injury perspective necessarily, but like from just the how much work you have to put in to achieve a result.
Right? Even if like the moves seem dangerous to me, yeah. you're saying like bodybuilding requires so much different lead up. Are you saying it's more dangerous?
No, so I'm saying, well, actually, strength sports in general are probably have the lowest injury rates of all physical activity.
Oh, I guess
so.
That's
like
true,
Olympic thing, powerlifting, like and bodybuilding,
and like, it's not like in sport, like in soccer, like you can't predict what you're gonna do.
Right.
There's other people involved.
Yes.
Yeah.
And figure skating, my God.
Yeah.
Throw. Let's just chuck this person in the air.
Yeah. Have them flip over five times. And yeah. Then like,
it's truly dangerous.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's
to mention
weak
micropause.
Powerlifting. I love that. I'm gonna say that just like I just need. I'm glad I know that now. Oh yeah, well, it's actually has the lowest injury. It's the easiest.
I mean, all sports have their own challenges and drawbacks, right? I find it's one of the most successful, right? So if you're someone, and I have a lot of people like this who has never competed in anything, right? And you're like, you start training, you start lifting weights, you're like, I like how this feels, I like something about it that's intrinsic to me. And then you maybe look at what can I do with it? You know, like, and this is when I can come in and be like, I think you'd really enjoy this. Why don't you try it?
And like a competition.
And they go to a meet, they train for it, you know, however long the time frame is between the meet and where they are now. And they go and you have to wear a singlet. So like a one piece,
like a wrestler.
Sexy.
Like,
everyone has to wear it. Everyone has to wear.
Okay, I'm literally going to do this. I'm kidding. Imagine, like, for my brand. Oh, by the way, I'm actually also doing powerlifting competition.
I also know someone who did custom singlets for our team. So, like, which is really, really fun because, like, it's not comfortable wearing that.
Okay. Singlets are so hot.
Yeah, but everyone's wearing one, and then you might as well look good in something you want to look good.
Every
gay
guy for Halloween's like, I'm a wrestler, just so they can wear a goddamn singlet.
Right.
It's like actually so annoying. You go to Halloween parties, like, oh, cool, yeah, you're a boxer. Hot take. Nice singlet. It is hot.
But you know what? It's like for people that, you know, again, want the lower risk, right? They want something that they can visibly or, you know, objectively say, I did that. I either lifted it or I didn't.
Yeah.
And maybe you'll win a prize, right? And maybe you'll have some good memories to walk away from after doing it. Even if you never do it again, you can say, you know what? Like, I trained for something. I trained for a goal. I achieved that goal. And I think that's really, really valuable.
Jack's version of marathon.
Yeah, pretty much.
Like, totally.
It's like without the band-aids on your nipples. You know?
Yeah, without band-aids on the nipple.
Oh my God.
I don't think I could.
Do you think I could be a powerlifter?
Okay, that is like the best question. Like, I'm going to say
yes. I definitely think you guys
like, but deep down, I'm like, that's not what you want.
I'm so bad at competition. Well, it actually just depends on what.
No, you're so good at game competition.
Oh, I'm really good at games.
You're really, really good at games.
Yeah.
Really good.
Does he play games with you?
We went to. One time we did.
So we had a client social.
Oh my God. I thought you meant like playing games in the gym. Like literally like mind, like playing with mind. Like, I'm actually not, that was actually only my second round.
We do chess squatting, which is the like chess boxing. So he squats for one set and then he makes a move and then I make my move.
We should do that.
Yeah.
No, but I feel like under the pressure of I like games that you can have more time to strategize and think. And I feel like something that requires like this pressure on this literal 10 seconds, I feel like I would cave. I definitely psych myself out a lot.
Do have three attempts, right? So in all of these, you do have three attempts.
Mitch, you a powerlifter.
Right? And usually what I tell people is, and this is very common advice, is your first attempt should be something that you can do, like your first single, because you're only lifting it for one time, but you're doing three attempts.
Okay.
Your first attempt should always be something you can do like on your worst training day. Like you slept 4 hours.
Yeah. Okay.
You have diarrhea and so then you could still come in the gym and you build your confidence. Cause you also don't want to bomb your first lift and then you're like, well, I didn't make that one, so now my second one's not gonna go well.
Yeah.
Right. And then you build from there.
Because isn't the weight that you lift gonna make you lose if you can't do enough weight? Or is it also how you do it? Like
I mean, there is how you do it in terms of like the hitting depth on the squat and adhering to the judges'
commands.
Oh,
you can just go to a competition. You can still like compete.
So I would tell people you're competing against yourself. Mm. Yes, there's a roster of lifters you're going to be in a flight with, which is what it's called. It's basically the order of who's going first based on the lift that they're doing and the weight on the bar. But again, at the same time, you're competing against your last lift.
Yeah, right? Like at the end of the day, not trying to necessarily get to the
unless
level
you have competitive aspirations where you're like, I want to go to a national level meet or like IPF, which is International Powerlifting Federation, which you can go somewhere usually in Europe and be judged with a really strict standard against people from all over the world. But again, that's the 1% of powerlifting.
So it's like, I can do it. I might get last place, but I did it.
Yeah.
Now that's fun.
And you know what? Like, honestly, that's one of people's biggest hangups with the sport is like, well, what if I come last? What if I'm the weakest one? What if I'm squatting only the bar? I'm like, it literally doesn't matter.
Right,
like, because I've been at meets where like there's someone there who has a 5-pound plate on either side of the bar and the audience is screaming for them to like, come on, get it up.
I'm going to cry. That's Disney.
Yeah.
That should be a movie.
Because it doesn't matter. It's like effort is effort.
Yeah.
And your struggle is your struggle. Your and best. People can empathize. Like, you really worked hard at that. Yeah. Like, I'm getting tingles just saying this.
Yeah. I'm obsessed with powerlifting.
And it's really, that's why, again, I think it's very, very, it's a very inclusive or democratic, if you want to use that term, sport. Mm. Where you can go and be celebrated based on your effort, not compared to someone else, unless you choose to try to medal or get at the higher level. But for people doing their first meets, I don't even put that on the radar. I'm like, just go do your best.
Oh my God, I can lift 5 pounds on each side. I should just go do that.
Yeah, you should.
Just be like, and like really dramatic, like,
and then put it on TikTok and go viral.
Yeah.
Question: in your view, is like powerlifting or Olympic lifting quote unquote healthy? You know what I mean? Like if we're talking about fitness and obviously like there's so many studies that show like lifting weights is like really good for you. The cardio is really good for you. Is this a type of modification that's not really about health? It's about like just pushing yourself to the limit, which obviously even like marathons could arguably be not that healthy for you because you're putting a lot of strain on your muscles.
So again, I would just reframe that question. When are you most likely to see negative effects from doing something that's supposedly health promoting when you take it to an extreme? So if you're an elite level powerlifter and you're pushing your body to achieve, put loads on yourself that, you know, most people in their lifetime will not ever touch. There's health drawbacks from that,
right?
Like if you're going to be a competitive runner, there's health drawbacks from that. Right. And if you're going to be a competitive figure skater, hockey player, you know, MMA fighter, like getting punched, getting punched in the head is not healthy.
Right.
You know, football player definitely.
It's
100%.
Like,
CTE is
like
very real.
Serious issues. I would never wish on my kid.
And so I think it all depends. Like, is the action of lifting weights healthy as a basic statement? Sure. But like anything, you can have, I don't want to say an abuse of it, but it's kind of like, for lack of a better term, that. Like you can take it to that extreme where it becomes unhealthy.
Yeah.
Just like you can, you know, basically eat more healthy to improve your body and your overall health and well-being, or you can take it to extreme and go into like eating disorder territory.
Yeah.
Is it the action of eating healthy that's the problem, or is it like how far take it, right?
Yeah, that's
the best way I can kind of phrase that. Because like, you know, you have people who have never touched weight before and start lifting, like, wow, I feel so much better. They notice all these health improvements. Like my doctor said my bone density is better.
Yeah, I was going to be like, good for the bones.
Yeah, my mood is better. My focus is better. And like anything, like, great, keep going, right? If you want to take that to another level, there's maybe some drawbacks from that to that, and there's always trade-offs with everything.
Yeah,
I'm gonna pull out one of my little studies now. We've been having so much fun talking about it. It came out last month, and it was like, oh god, I don't
power know how lifting to use a freaking tablet. Is bad.
I'm kidding.
Imagine
that would be the journalist's title on the
the news article. Like, powerlifting takes 5 years off your life.
Yeah.
So obviously, we know like exercise is healthy and strength training is healthy. Like, it's not like this is groundbreaking, but it was over 3 decades, hundreds of thousands of people between the ages of 18 to 97. This came out last month.
97, hot.
Yeah,
that's an amazing longitudinal study.
Huge. And ultimately, they found that muscle strengthening lowers the risk of death from all causes, including cancer and heart disease. I love when they say all causes because you're like, from getting hit by a car?
Yeah.
But all natural causes.
Well, yeah, you stop a car,
but I mean, strength.
Actually,
I've heard stories of people who are like on their bicycle or motorbike, they get hit after literally coming from the gym, like I think of one story in particular, and yeah, they had to go get surgery. They had broken bones and stuff, but they
if,
like recovered.
Yeah, maybe your recovery is higher if you're...
Yeah, yeah. You're more durable.
So that's interesting. This study was trying to specifically find like a quote unquote dose, because that's never been quantified before.
A dose of strength?
Exercise.
Training?
Of exercise, basically. Oh, okay. And what they found was that 30 to 60 minutes a week of activities like lift weighting or push-ups or heavy gardening brought about the, like up to 20% chance decrease in dying from all causes.
Wait, 30 to 60 minutes a week?
A week, that's it.
Wow.
So basically they were just trying to be like, after that there are improvements, but they call it a J curve, so it just like doesn't
the ROI
for the average person
the
it's like 60 minutes
if you heavy gardening.
Heavy gardening was one of them.
I'm obsessed. Science is like such a nerdy territory, because like truly they're always like, do you do realize gardening's the best thing for your goddamn health? Like that's always said, and I'm like, I think that's like
well, because you're with
nerd bias
and you're moving.
Yeah, no I know, and whenever I do garden I'm like, this is hard, but I'm like, there's a lot of other things, like, you know, like,
oh, they gave cleaning. More examples. It was like carrying grocery bags and like yoga and like
it's you just start going into no frills and taking other people's bags and like walking to their car.
Honestly, I got that for you.
But gardening is like an aerobic exercise, but I'm also sometimes I'm like, it's like a bad one for if you don't do it right, you're bending over wrong. It's just like a weird thing that people
you can
choose
injure yourself from it.
Or like a lot of studies choose
sometimes
out of
my
all
back
the things.
Hurts after I
you have to crouch down.
That was just strength training, and then they said in the study, when they combined aerobic exercise, that risk dropped by 40%. Yeah. And I thought that was amazing. Like, obviously, we all know it's healthy, like, good for you, but it is cool to be like, okay, we can
see. Yeah, the more studies to, like, make you remember why you're goddamn doing it.
Yeah. And I had a difference, so unless you have something else you want to say.
No, I mean, that's awesome. I think my biggest takeaway that I get from that is what the minimum effective dose can look like.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because I think people can have this
idea
that if
you
are
not,
if you are not training 5 days a week, well, then it's pointless.
Not worth it.
And I've seen posts online from people basically downplaying the effect of exercise if you are someone who sits, you know, for a certain amount of time per day.
Then it's like not worth it.
But when you look at the research, it doesn't actually support that idea. It's like even if you are sitting or in a sedentary job for 8 hours a day,
mm-hmm.
you're still better off exercising versus not exercising.
Totally.
So we want to get people, more people moving and more people finding ways to move that are meaningful to them. And if that study is basically looking at over a very long time frame, you only need 30 to 60 minutes and you can see this massive marked health improvement, but also like maybe you won't die earlier or from different causes. That's awesome. That's what we need more
that
of.
That is
right?
True. It's nice that it's not that much.
It's part of that accessibility piece that I really do try to get across to people, where like something is literally better than nothing. Like you can, if you can't do an hour workout, cool. Do 30 minutes. You can't do 30 minutes, go for a 10-minute walk. Like we're talking about long, like lasting behaviors that are done sustainably over time.
Yeah. Like
and you can always scale it up. Like you can always do more.
Yeah.
But oftentimes for people, the hardest part is getting started. And so if you can make that first rung on the ladder, like very, very accessible, then, well, guess what? They're going to feel more motivated. Like, oh, I can do that. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I get benefits from that. Amazing.
Yeah.
Like that. So that's what stuck out to me about that.
Totally.
Yeah, that's
true. You don't have to, because it can feel overwhelming. You're right. When most people, because I feel like in most people's minds, at least mine when I started, it felt like if I was doing anything less than 3 days a week, it was kind of like, is it doing anything? But knowing mentally, like, of course it's still doing something, but you kind of get this in your head, like, oh, you want to commit to something, but then it becomes overwhelming when you're like.
And it does take a long time.
Yeah. And at the beginning, your body hurts so much that you're like, I can't. I don't want to do another one at the beginning, you know?
And like also going to the gym, it's like you always just like go to a space where there's someone who's just like so jacked.
Yeah.
Like there's always someone at a gym that you're like comparing yourself to, and you're like, I come here a lot, but like, why the hell don't I look like that?
Yeah.
And like, you don't get to see
how long they've been doing it for.
How long they've been doing it, like what they're eating. Like,
and also if you're really, really sore right out of the gate, like all the time, maybe the dosage of stuff you're doing needs to be adjusted.
Dial it back a little.
Right? Because soreness is largely related to novelty.
I love the soreness.
Though. Yeah.
But like at the
unless you really like it, in which case just keep
it. Yeah, I love it. It's like, oh yeah. Cause it's like, I'm going to eat my shreddy.
Now I like it to a degree, but there's times when I'm like too sore and I'm like,
I love it.
If I can't sit down on the toilet, I'm like, okay,
I love that. Wait, that's so funny. I literally love it because it's just a sign that I did something.
No, I know it's true. I have distinct memories from starting though, like even before meeting you, like where I would work out probably way too hard and for a week I couldn't work out again.
Oh, I see.
So it was like so much that you're just like walking in pain.
There's like, you know, typical DOMS or delayed onset muscle soreness.
DOMS?
DOMS.
What's that mean?
Doms.
Oh, DOMS.
Delayed onset muscle soreness.
You know? I thought you meant like DOM top. That's a gay thing. Delayed onset muscle soreness. I know.
Where like it typically peaks about 48 hours after about exercise. But usually, again, it's dependent on how new or different is it from what you did before.
Yeah.
So if you haven't trained in a while and then you go really, really hard, I'm not surprised you're sore for 7 days.
So DOMS is 48 hours for reals?
It usually peaks at that. But again, it can really, it purely depends on how much volume of work you did relative to how often you've been exposed to that in the past.
Because like, my trainer, I'm always like, the next day I'll be like, oh, my butt hurts. And he's like, wait till tomorrow.
Yeah.
And I'm always like, okay, like, is that real? It's like, oh, okay. He's reading his DOM studies.
Yeah. Oh, it was the second day.
Yeah, usually peaks around there. Again, it's very individual, but that's typically the average.
Yeah, he always says that. I'm like, is that true? And now I'm like, it probably is.
And now it's become a self-fulfilling prophecy. So like,
You're mentally waiting
for 48 hours when DOMs are the worst.
Okay, the other thing I wanted to bring up, because you are a trainer and a coach, was this study was specifically on men and motivation for going to the gym. But what it found was that like a lot of men will give explicit reasons for going to the gym to like be healthy or whatever. But implicitly, they found that a lot of them had fears of body fat as opposed to having like positive affirmative. Like a lot of people, it said in particular, spontaneous gym goers are more likely to be motivated by guilt, shame, or pressure. Mm. And I was curious, like as a trainer, how you kind of like evaluate what someone's, obviously there's no wrong reason to try and get fit, but obviously if you are going because you're guilty or feeling bad about yourself, maybe that's like less sustainable or not the right
and
reason.
I feel like I have, like when I started with my old trainer, I was like, to have a healthier attitude towards life and to be mentally
like,
clear.
And in my head I was like, girl, I want to get docked for the summer. I want a bigger butt.
Like I eventually said that like after like 2 weeks. I was like, nah, I just want the biggest ass.
Can I just be honest with you? This is really what I wanted.
What, that I want a big ass?
No,
I told my trainer that and then he stopped working out like everything else. Now I had to be like, okay, I want a big ass, but at the cost.
Roll it back. Crazy. I still care about the rest of my body.
Yeah. But it was like so funny. I was like, are we gonna do something else? And I was like, my ass always hurt. But
That makes sense. Okay, so if you're looking at the motivations for people like when they first come in, I obviously, like, and I tell people this, when you're meeting me for the first time or you're meeting a trainer in general, that's a pretty vulnerable like thing you're doing, right? You're coming into a space that may not be comfortable for you. You're meeting a complete stranger, even if you have read their blog or whatever beforehand, and you're talking to them about like some things that are pretty intrinsic and maybe delicate, right? Like you're not happy with some aspect of who you are, or something about yourself, and you're like hoping that this person can like help you achieve that or change that, right? I don't expect anyone to like tell me all
the
deep, dark rationales as to what they really want to accomplish from training on the first conversation. I don't expect that to happen after like a few weeks or months because it's ultimately a relationship, right? Like, you know, we're getting to know each other. You're learning to trust me and I'm learning more about you. And then I'm helping you basically helping find the right dosage and the right amount of this stuff that works for you, you know, keeps you engaged, keeps you focused. What kind of cues work for you, right? And then over time, you might divulge like a little bit more information and be like, you know what, I want to try this.
I do just want to honk an ass.
Yeah. And that's where sometimes the goals change, right? And so people can come in and not have very clearly defined goals in the beginning, and then after, you know, seeing like, oh, you know what, I've been consistent at this. I've never been consistent at anything. Like, I wonder what else I can achieve.
Yeah.
Sounds
like me.
And I do agree though. There is a bit of a, almost a stigma or stigma is maybe the right word. There's something wrong with like wanting to look better.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. No, I
feel
I agree
that all the time.
Yeah. And so I
lie.
And it's, yeah, and it's not even,
you know, I wouldn't
even
mind if a byproduct, I look better, but it's not what I want.
And that's usually, that's usually what they say.
Not what I really want.
And it's not even so women true. Only. They're saying this. It's men. Like,
yeah. Right? Yeah.
And they'll make it very clear. Like, I don't want, like you've even said this.
Oh, totally.
I don't want to be like a bodybuilder or anything. I just want to feel a bit better. And I'm like, but you wouldn't mind having bigger biceps, would you? Right. Like, And that's okay. Like, there's nothing wrong with that. Like, muscles can hypertrophy. Mm-hmm. Like, we know this. If that's a byproduct of your training, even though that wasn't expressed to your goal from the beginning, that's cool. There's no shame in that. Mm-hmm. But like you said, like, no one, I don't think there's any reason why you should tell someone your goals are not worthwhile because maybe their goals are different than yours, or you have a different focus for why you do fitness versus them. Like, again, the point is to get more people moving in whatever way that keeps them motivated. If it's like looking hot, cool.
Right.
As long as you're not doing anything that's, again, too extreme and putting you at risk or it's, you know, triggering or it takes you to a place that is just not sustainable mentally.
Mm-hmm.
that's fine.
Like, so is body dysmorphia, what is that? Now I'm like, we should do an episode on body dysmorphia.
Yeah, you should write that down.
Like, I will write that down.
Well, I think in general, yeah.
When you don't.
A lot of gay men in particular, I think, suffer with body dysmorphia. But I wouldn't be surprised if just tons of people do, especially in today's world with social media.
Because it's not so feeling many. Like your body's adequate. Or so. I mean, we just need
maybe
to
like always way. Feeling like you never are the body you want to be. Or like
you're
even,
never good enough.
Even people who have like, from our eyes, like beautiful bodies being like, no, but I'm not where I want to be. Yeah. Like I feel flubby. I feel like I have too much or not big enough muscles. Like. That objective disconnect between me, like, no, you are really fit and you don't think you are. Yeah. Or even not really fit. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, but again, so much this is subjective. Yeah. You know, like trying telling someone who's depressed, like, no, you should be happy. You have so many things that are going well in your life. Yeah. It's like, that doesn't work. Mm-hmm. Like, and that's not even helpful.
Yeah, and body dysmorphia is likely probably a part of like another mental health issue. Like it's maybe one aspect of like a bigger thing.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm literally gonna write that, or I'll do it after. Cause I'm like, that is so interesting. Cause I do think it is a separate conversation. That's related.
That's a big topic. Yeah. Like, that's a big topic.
And I've, and I know people talk about it a lot and they throw the word around a lot and make jokes. Yeah. A lot of people go, oh, I have body dysmorphia. And like, we all laugh. Like, and it's like, sometimes I'm like, wait, do you? Or like, cause it's like not it's taken like, as seriously necessarily.
Well, it's something you can't
see. Like saying I'm depressed, but then it's like, well, are you clinically depressed or are you just like,
and I don't want to like feeling depressed, right?
But it's like, sometimes we're all like, ha, body dysmorphia. And in my head, I'm like, wait, is that fine?
Yeah. And there's a whole thing of what you can't see is still very real for the person that's describing it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, you know, again, this just goes back to like, you have to be honest with yourself about what your motivations are for doing this. You have to also be open to maybe getting feedback from people, like let you know that how you're progressing or how you're doing in relation to your goals. And then you have to also be self-aware enough to be like, you know what, this is actually taking more away from me than it is giving me.
Yeah.
And again, this is a like insanely broad topic and there's a lot of nuance in there. And I think it's tough to cover in social media. And that's why I think you see people throw out the terms and don't actually go into like, what does it actually mean if you are dealing with that? And it's just not something like, you know, you can just say, oh, I'm so ADD. It's like, no. Like, like you can say that, but like,
there's a lot more meaning behind what
and there's what, if you've been clinically diagnosed versus if you have trouble focusing, like there's a very big difference there. Right.
Yeah, so that's a really good point. Me and Mitch do this thing where we try and like, maybe I just do this fish for compliments. I'll be like topless, like my shoulder skinny, and then Mitch
literally
is like,
last night,
shut up. I'm like, oh wait, what, it looks big.
Every night we do like this game gets played,
but you do it too.
No, I do.
Yes,
not.
You do. You're lying through your goddamn teeth.
Okay, fine. I think
you'll be like, oh my god, it's not working. I'm looking smaller, and then I'd be like, no, you look so much bigger and jacked. Like we do it all the time, and it's like so sad.
I've talked about this with Mitch quite a few times, and like I think one of the best ways to kind of reduce the noise in terms of like how you see yourself, because our eyes are not trustworthy in a lot of these cases, right? And we know that how your body looks is going to fluctuate day to day.
Yeah.
How much you've eaten, how often you go to the bathroom, have you worked out or not, are you in a warm climate versus a cold climate, like what time of day is it. And so this is where like having some more objective measures to compare
to actually
like photos or measurements, as long as it's something that's, again, not triggering or doesn't put you in a negative mental spiral.
Right. Oh, interesting.
Having that data to go back to and actually be like, you know what? I may feel like I'm small today, but compared to 6 months ago, look at the progress I've made.
Objectively, I am big.
Wow, I've never thought about how like that is important.
It's no different than if someone's like, I'm not making progress on my lift. Like, I'm not lifting more this week than I was last week. I'm like, but if you go back 6 months when you're only squatting 25 pounds and they're squatting 300, that's actually pretty ridiculous progress. If anyone actually makes that progress,
that person
let me know.
Okay.
That's probably not a good comparison.
But you mean
like
when they're going week to week, it's like, no, but go further back. Yeah.
And it's hard to notice, right? And like there's an analogy of like the toilet paper analogy, where if you have a roll of toilet paper and you just pulled one strip off per day, you know, after 30 days, the roll wouldn't look that different. But then you get past that and you keep doing the action of pulling the strip off, and you're like, wow, that roll's a lot smaller.
Yeah.
Right. And changes are very, very hard to notice. And that's why I tend to encourage people to look at the direction they're trending in versus like the day-to-day fluctuations, because those are always going to be there. Like, I fluctuate 3 to 5 pounds depending on the day. And that's normal. Right. And, you know, and that will affect how lean you look and how you feel, and even your performance in the gym. Or you can let it do that, or you can say, you know what, it's just a blip on the radar. Yeah. In the grand overall scheme of things, I'm still making progress. Because if you look at like long-term, you know, weight loss charts that are successful, like that have done it sustainably, not like a crash diet or like a Biggest Loser type situation, you'll see it's like the stock market. It's not like consistently up or consistently down. It's like, okay, you went down a little bit, and then maybe you had a birthday party, and then you went down again, and you had vacation, and then and whatever your life events were, or maybe you weren't on track for this amount of time and you kind of maintained, and then you kept going down, right?
That's a really good point.
And the same with goes to strength gains. Like, if we all just could walk in the gym and throw 5 pounds in the bar every single time we lifted, like if you did that for your hip thrust, right? And you'd be hip thrusting 1,000 pounds by now, your butt would have its own zip code. Yeah. And, but that's just not realistic. Yeah. I'd be lifting thousands of pounds by now, but I'm not, right? And so we have to understand that progress as a metric and whatever you're measuring it is not linear. And you have to find some way to enjoy the process and to have a, you know, zoom out and have a bird's eye view of how well you're actually doing. Because especially if you're really critical of yourself. I imagine that it
becomes pretty hard when like, because obviously like I've started for my back. Now I'm getting into this realm of like pushing myself, but there's going to be plateaus. And I'm sure that can be mentally challenging in and of itself to be like, why can't I progress anymore?
Yeah.
Do you feel like, I'm just wondering about people who train a lot. Like, does that become a problem for people? Because it's hard to know, like, well, this is the stage I want to be at, and then I'm okay to never have progress again and just maintain it. Right?
Yeah,
like,
I see.
Like, I've never had to think about that because I'm just starting.
Yeah, you're still very early.
But at some point...
Drag him.
You're still kidding. You're still very... It's not a bad thing. It just means
you're... Chire name.
But I'm wondering, like, because you've trained for a long time and you've worked with so many people.
That is interesting to be like, I actually am done. Like, I'm going to keep doing this way.
Or I have to keep working just as hard for no more progress.
Yeah. You know so I mean, there's a few different points to that. One is, I think the people who have the longest amount of success or consistency with, we'll use weightlifting as the example, are the ones where it's a part of like who you are. Mm-hmm. And you're no longer doing it expressly for the gains that you once saw. You're doing it because it's part of your lifestyle. Like, I am bald and I go to the gym because I find it valuable for X number of Y reasons.
I like it. Yeah.
And it makes you feel good. And I feel like without it, I feel not so good or maybe empty, whatever. Versus someone who at the beginning who's like, I need to have ways of measuring my progress in order to stick with it. Because if I don't see progress, well, guess what? I'm liking it.
Motivation zero.
Like, why am I even doing this if I'm not seeing an return on my investment?
Yeah.
So there's that portion of it. But then going, you know, a little bit deeper, like if you look at anyone who's a master in their craft, right? Like I'll use the field of like filmmaking, for example. I have a colleague who his wife writes film scores. And the question came up of like, how do you top like when you win an Oscar?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, what do you do after? Are you just done?
Is that your peak and you should
like,
stop?
I'm just going to stop working?
Yeah.
It's like, no. Because
Golden Globe?
What's the next one?
Critics' Choice Award?
It's like, what will keep you going? Well, it's like a commitment to the process and the work.
Yeah.
You're trying to always just do good work,
whether
or not it ends up being an Oscar worthy or not. And I think that, again, that's a mindset that gets developed over time. It's not something I talk about with people who are brand new because in the beginning, they already have enough stuff to think about. Mm. And I have very clear indicators like you're making great progress. Mm-hmm. And literally for a beginner, like this is the funny thing is you can do almost anything.
Mm-hmm.
And like and get stronger progress. And see progress. And that's where like if you look at exercise science studies, sometimes I'm like, oh yeah, they put on 40 kilos to their squat in 8 weeks, but they were also untrained males. And I'm like, that's super common.
Right.
Oh,
to be able
or like
to
you could like, literally have them squat any which way and they probably would have gained 40 kilos.
Right.
So I'm more concerned when it looks, when you're talking about progress long-term, take someone who's experienced, did they get better?
Right.
Because then you have more credibility as far as your methods that you
harder
use
to work through
versus like throwing and like I could have this beginner squat 5x5 and this beginner squat 5x10 and this beginner do air squats and they likely all get stronger.
Right. Mm. Yeah.
That's
just
cool.
Because when you start, you have
you're
nowhere
brand
to go
new.
But up.
Your body's like, give me all the weights.
Yeah. Huh.
That's kind of nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, do you have any other questions? Personal questions? Things you need to know before Paul goes?
No, I guess I don't, but I'm definitely like just need to rein in my farts. That was good on that. Yeah, some bananas.
Priority number one, please.
No, I need to know. I just needed to know that bodybuilding was just like what it was. I just needed to know that. Yeah. I just needed to know it was kind of what I thought it was, and it's just like that's insane to me.
Yeah. Paul, do you have anything else that's on your mind about whether it comes to bodybuilding or health and fitness and exercise?
Well, I think you mentioned one thing, which was like advice for people.
Yeah, yeah, true.
Like starting out, like yeah. They've never done this before, right? Speaking to you, not in my Arnold accent. So all I would say is that everyone you see in the gym, everyone you see doing this stuff was a beginner at one point in time, right? Like yeah. I remember stepping in the gym and being like, I thought the smallest guy in there. And seeing people who are lifting way more than me and being like, wow, like, okay, do I even deserve to be in this place? But over time, you come to learn that like, well, listen, everyone has their story and everyone started somewhere, right? And if you can find something you can stick with, right? Something that makes you feel good, something that gives you a very tangible measures of progress or just makes you feel better mentally, like whatever your motivations are for getting into fitness, like that's what matters. And it's hard to avoid or ignore all the other reasons that people say you should be doing this for,
right,
when maybe they don't matter to you that much.
Yeah.
So I would say find your why. Like, why do I want to, you know, lift weights? Do I want to be stronger? Do I want to take care of my parents as they get older? Do I want to just be more physically capable of my job? You know, do I want my back or insert body part here to hurt less? Like, really focus in on that, because that's what's going to keep you going, you know, when it's not as easy, right? And when it starts to get more challenging, or when you get up in the morning, you don't want to go to the gym, you know, remembering your why is like super important. And then if you have the means to, and you have the resources, hiring a coach or getting someone to help with some aspect of this stuff that you don't quite understand. And I fully empathize with people. Like, there's a lot of information out there. It's really hard to sort through and be like, well, what is the path for me? And and going back to that beginner point I made earlier, you can literally do anything and see progress.
That's a good way.
So like, you can reframe that. Like, there's so much out there, but I literally just have to start.
Do one of them.
Like, you could literally just go in, you could start doing bodyweight exercise at home and likely feel better about that. Right. And then, coaching or assistance is helpful, but I will be the first to say not necessary or even reasonable for people to look for. And, you know, this is where YouTube and there are other resources that are really good. But I mean, again, the biggest thing is just being consistent. Like, forget the, you know, 5 years from now where you want to be. Just focus on being consistent day to day, right? And the nice thing about, you know, starting something like this is that you tend to see positive benefits the rest of your life in terms of like other behaviors that go along with it. So like, you start working out and maybe you start making better eating choices. And maybe you start to try to sleep a bit more because you're like, wow, I feel way better during my workouts when I sleep more.
Or you're tired. You're like finally tired.
Versus when I don't. Yeah. And then again, like minimum effective dose, going back to that other study you said, like what's important is that you're doing it, not how much you're doing, right? So even if it's just 30 minutes, that's 30 minutes that you weren't doing a week ago when you didn't start. And you compound that over time and you can see some pretty awesome things happen. So
that's really good advice. And I would just add, like, as somebody who was like a really afraid of the gym for a long time, like, I don't know what trauma happened to me when I was like a gay kid in high school or
being
something.
Gay.
Yeah. Literally. But like, now as an adult, and I obviously am like still new to this, but I do feel like at least the gym environments I've been in have been really supportive and kind and nice. And I haven't felt like, maybe bigger gyms are harder because there's so many people. Your brain can be like, am I being judged? But like, we go to a relatively like smaller gym where you train me, and I just feel like everyone's so nice and supportive, and my fear was unfounded for most of the scenarios I've been in. And I just think that's for a lot of people, it's like scary to be in.
What if other people are watching me?
And like kind of judging me and think I'm stupid and all that. So,
and you know, like, that is a real fear, right? In a lot of cases. Why are there mirrors in the gym? So people can look at themselves,
right?
Not care about anyone else.
He always thinks people are more watching him. I'm like, no one's looking at you.
Yeah, no. The gym tends to be
not like that. I mean, like, you think people are looking at you in a bad way. And I'm like, no one's looking at you in a bad way.
Anxiety. Okay, that's a different issue, a different episode.
I have the opposite. I'm like, please look at my ass. Look at my ass as I do this squat. Look at my ass.
Most people are too busy focusing on themselves. And rightfully so. What you're doing is intensive and does require your attention, right?
Sometimes I like zoom out at like me in the mirror, like lifting weights. Like, and I'm like, oh my God. Like, okay. This is so embarrassing. Cause I'm literally like red in the face, like red, screaming, like making so my hard. Biceps go up. And I'm like, staring at myself.
See, different motivations.
Yeah.
There you go. Well, Paul, where can people like find you online or in person, or what can they do to learn more about you?
Yeah. Well, I'm, again, as a trainer, if you're worried about privacy on the internet, you're probably in the wrong field. So I'm very easy to find. I'm at Paul_Hines on Instagram. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Facebook, although it's probably harder to find me on there because of like filters and stuff. And there's a
Paul
lot of Paul
Hines.
There's a lot of Paul Hines. Yeah, you can put the
Paul underscore Hines.
The tag. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. You put the tag in the show notes as
yeah,
well.
Yeah.
Actually, sorry, it's Paul.Hines. Okay. See, I don't even know my own Instagram.
Okay, careful.
Paul.Hines. H, is that a Y?
H-Y-N-E-S.
There we go.
Yeah, and yeah, I have a website, www.HinesPerformance.ca. And I work out of the Parkdale area and the downtown core. And I work with all types of folks. So don't think that like it's only for athletes or only for powerlifters or, you know,
it's for little wimps like me too.
It's for everyone. Like training and getting stronger and noticing physical benefits and like physical development, I firmly believe is for everyone. It's something that maybe you didn't have an opportunity to do in school or you never felt you belonged with it. But like, guess what? If you're an adult now, you can forge your own path and write a new chapter in your story. And I've seen some pretty amazing changes happen from just people being like, you know what? I'm going to try that thing again that I didn't have a good experience with first.
Amazing.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming on the pod.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
Now
welcome.
Thanks everyone for listening, and we'll see you next week.
See you in the gym, gains, y'all.
Bye.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.